On September 17th, Utah Foundation celebrated its 75th anniversary with a luncheon at the Grand America in Salt Lake City. The event included the presentation of our Insight Award to businesswoman and philanthropist Gail Miller. It also featured a conversation with keynote speaker Ifosa Ojomo, co-author with the late Clayton Christensen of the recent book The Prosperity Paradox, How Innovation Can Lift Nations Out of Poverty. But in this podcast, we address the portion of the event that most pertains to the November election, a discussion between KSL-TV anchor Deanie Wimmer and the gubernatorial candidates Spencer Cox and Chris Peterson. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichard. Every 4 years, Utah Foundation surveys Utah voters to find out which issues concern them most. The 2020 Utah Priorities Project found that voters' very top areas of concern were healthcare costs, taxes, education, the economy, and the coronavirus pandemic. Those priority areas formed the framework for Deanie Wimmer's discussion with Spencer Cox and Chris Peterson. Here she is introducing Spencer Cox.
Let's first turn to Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. Spencer J. Cox is Utah's 8th Lieutenant Governor. He was born and raised in San Pete County and grew up working on the family farm. After graduating from North San Pete High, he moved to Mexico for 2 years to volunteer for his church. He earned degrees from Snow College, Utah State University, and Washington and Lee Law School in Virginia. After spending several years with the Salt Lake City law firm, Spencer returned to San Pete, where he joined the family telecom business. In 2008, Spencer was elected as a San Pete County Commissioner and served for 4 years before being elected to the Utah House of Representatives in 2012. After serving just 9 months as a state representative, Spencer was selected by Governor Gary Herbert to succeed Greg Bell as Lieutenant Governor. He was confirmed unanimously by the Utah Senate and sworn in October 16, 2013. Governor Herbert and Lieutenant Governor Cox were reelected to another term in 2016. So I wanted to begin by talking about what is on everyone's mind, and that is the coronavirus crisis. It has changed everything. It's affected all of us in different ways. The Utah Foundation's top five issues on their priority list from their survey emerged as healthcare costs and accessibility, taxation and spending, education, jobs in the economy, and public health. All are related to COVID. All of them are top priorities among the public. What of those areas would be your top concern? And as governor, what would you make the number one priority of that list?
Well, thank you, Deanie. As of today, like right now, this moment, of course, the top concern is the spread of the virus and the health. And it's incumbent on all of us to take those steps that are important to mitigate the spread of the virus. But long term, and I think Chris and I won't have the opportunity to be governor if we get to be governor until January, we're going to be looking at the economic impact for sure. There's a reason that is always on the list. We know that the state of Utah is doing better than every other state out there. That's unequivocal. We know that. Unemployment at 4.5%, the national average is over 10%. We were getting new numbers tomorrow. We hope that those numbers will continue to go down. That's the good news. Now, the bad news is that we also know that we are running on stimulus money, the likes of which we have never seen in our country. And eventually that sugar high is going to wear off, and it's going to happen. And so it's so critical that we are focused on workforce. That's what matters. Before this pandemic, we had thousands of people, we had thousands of jobs available and people who didn't have jobs, and we couldn't bring those two together, right? We need a qualified workforce. And so this idea of training workforce, upskilling our workforce, I think is one of the most important things we're going to do coming out of this pandemic, because not all of the jobs are going to recover. We know that. And so we have to create opportunities for people to get those jobs that are available and make sure they can improve their quality of life.
Okay. Well, I want to touch more a little bit on that in a minute. According to the 2020 survey from Utah Foundation, healthcare and accessibility top the voters' list of concerns. What is the state's role in bringing down some of those costs and in pharmaceuticals and in healthcare services?
Yes, yeah, so this has been very frustrating to me. Utah has historically been known, one of the things that we're known across the nation for is having low healthcare costs. And that is still true. We're still top 10, top 5 in almost every category. But being the best of a very bad and broken system isn't something to rest on or to be excited about. And we've spent, unfortunately, the last 8 years fighting about the Affordable Care Act. It it took our eye off the mark. The Affordable Care Act did absolutely nothing to lower the cost of care, healthcare. It's a clever name, but it didn't help. It did give people more access to healthcare, which is a good thing, but we haven't lowered the cost of healthcare. Now, the government does have a role to play. If you look at the foundation report, certainly the cost of insurance is a big piece of that, and bringing that in, and that's tied directly to the cost of healthcare. But drug costs are another big one, and that's something that we're going to be focusing on as an administration. Many of you know my running mate, Deidre Henderson. She's incredible. Coming out of the Senate, last year she was very instrumental in getting past some legislation focusing on medicine for diabetics and helping to lower that. That's something that's been a national problem. And so as a state and working together with the legislature, there is a role we can play, but we have to focus on the innovation piece. We have healthcare providers in this room. Some of the best and brightest minds in the world are right here. We can't rely on government to solve all of those, but we can bring those best minds together and continue to work on lowering the cost of healthcare.
How concerned are you about expanding eligibility?
Well, so this is something that we've done in the state. We are a full Medicaid expansion state. Now, it was deeply concerning. As many of you know, the governor worked very hard on what he called Healthy Utah, which is a conservative version of Medicaid expansion. It passed the Senate. It did not pass the House. But the voters weighed in and said, we want this. And so we did expand. My concern is with the increasing cost of Medicaid to the state, right? It's historically been a budget buster if we don't watch it. So that innovation has to happen in that sphere as well. If we're able to lower the cost of healthcare, and there's lots of ways we can do that, by the way, there's incredible innovation happening around this idea that the cost of people's health isn't just about access to care. It's not just about insurance. It's so much more than that. It's about access to good food. It's about good access to housing, all of those things. Your zip code should not determine how long you live. And that's where we're starting to turn our focus. And if we can do that, if we can help people be healthier, then the cost of healthcare will go down. It's not just about treating them once they end up in the hospital. It's about helping them live healthier lifestyles before they get there. And any dollar spent there will save us hundreds of dollars down the road.
Well, I want to move now to taxation and government spending. What is your philosophy on taxation?
Well, I'm a conservative for a reason. I believe very strongly that people are better at using their money. The government is not great at it. Government's a hammer and everything's a nail. And government, of course, plays a role. I don't believe in no government, but I believe in efficient government. And we've been able to show efficient government as a state, again, leading the nation when it comes to these really important categories, being recognized as the best managed state in the nation for many, many years. And so my philosophy is that government should be as efficient as possible and that we should work and collaborate with the private sector, with the nonprofit sector, with the faith-based sector, people who are closest to the people to make those decisions. Here's what we do. Government was not designed to solve all of our problems, but the institutions that were designed to help government solve those problems are unfortunately eroding, and we're losing more and more of those across the country. And when that happens, government becomes the last resort. But again, government is not good at solving so many of those problems. Again, the problems that are related to the people at the lowest level. We are different here in Utah. In fact, a study just came out yesterday at the national level that showed that we had the greatest income equality in the country right here in the state of Utah. Now, we still have a lot of work to do, but my philosophy is that we should work closely with the private sector, the nonprofit sector, to help deliver what is necessary to the people of Utah. We've been able to lower, we have fewer state employees than we had since 2004 because we are more efficient.
Along those lines, then, are there areas where we're spending too much or too little?
Yes, there are.
Name one of them.
I can. Yeah. And we've actually named one already. One of the areas where we're spending too much is on healthcare. We really have to arrest the increase in healthcare. One of the areas where we are spending too little is education, and I know this is one of the five priority areas. But we are spending too little in education, and sometimes we're spending it in the wrong ways, and we're getting better. We've seen significant increases in spending. My hat's off to the legislature for their incredible work. We may be the only state that during this pandemic, every state had to go back and readjust their budgets. We were coming out of a session where we saw significant increases. We weren't able to follow through on all of those increases, but we did. Not only did we not decrease the amount of spending on education, but we did have an increase of about 2%. With everything that's happening out there, that's remarkable and really shows the priority. But we have a long ways to go. We need to pay our teachers more. We have a teacher shortage in this state. That's one area. And the other area that I just feel passionate about, and you're going to hear more of this from me in the coming days and weeks, and that is equity in education. And this is not necessarily at the state level because we do fund education on a per pupil basis at the state level. But at the local level, when you look at all the money that is spent on education, we have students on the west side that are getting about half the funding per pupil that students on the east side are getting. And students in rural Utah, where I live and where my kids live in Title I schools, there is a huge disparity. And the Utah Constitution guarantees everyone a quality education. And you can't tell me that we're getting a similar education in those schools when we're spending twice as much in one school than in another.
That leads me to education. You know, a lot of, as parents, we're just, our priority was to get our kids back in school. So you've mentioned some of the things in K-12, specific things, inequity, teacher funding, that we need to do better. Name a thing in K-12, the arena, where we're getting it right, we're doing things right.
Well, there are lots of areas that we're getting it right. And I just look, in the middle of a pandemic, right, there's no roadmap to this. And what we have seen our teachers and our administrators do over the past several months is historic. And they deserve our gratitude. They deserve our praise. It is a very difficult situation to have students who are learning from home, students who are learning in the classroom, teachers who may be in a vulnerable position. I would put our teaching core up against any group in the world. We have the best teachers in the world, and I'm so grateful for the work that they're doing. And there are some other really, really amazing things happening right now. Again, the use of technology, as was mentioned by the keynote speaker before, there are some positives that are coming out of coronavirus, not a lot, but the ability to connect better with families is a really positive thing. Additional resources that are coming now electronically to help aid in the teaching that's happening in the classroom. But there is no substitute for the teacher, and we have to make sure that we're providing for our teachers and that we're encouraging the next generation of great teachers to step into this profession.
I'd love to move to jobs in the economy. What right now is our state doing well to help in job creation, and where are some of the areas where we could do better?
Yeah, so as many of you saw a couple weeks ago, we announced kind of a reformulation, a refocus of our coronavirus response, both on the health side and on the economic side. I asked the dean of the University of Utah Business School, Taylor Randall, who many of you know, to lead that economic side. And I know Derek Miller's here with the chamber and his team, and it's just been an incredible partnership to see them coming together and focusing on these areas, specifically on job creation, again, making making sure that our workforce development piece is happening so that as jobs are created, we have a workforce that that can fill those jobs. And there's very little to complain about as far, again, looking at the rest of the nation and the rest of the world when it comes to the economic growth that we are seeing here in our state. And so some of the other things we're doing right, we have a couple, not just once in a generation projects, but once in the history, twice in the history of our state type projects that we're seeing at the Point of the Mountain now. We had a huge announcement this week. I know Muriel is here who helped us with that. The Point, if you go to thepointutah.org, you can see what's happening down there. And then the Northwest Corridor of Salt Lake, the incredible innovation and growth that's coming out there will benefit our kids for generations to come. It's a really big deal. Now where are we maybe not doing as well? I know that one of the things that you all will be focusing on this year is incentives. I've been very vocal about the way we incentivize business growth in our state and in our nation. I think it's been a broken model for a lot of reasons. We do it better here in Utah than a lot of other places with post-performance incentives, but I think we can do so much more. Again, I think we should be focusing on workforce development. I think we should not be giving away large incentives to a lot of businesses that are going to come here anyway. I think we should be very focused and go deeper. I'm not saying we should get rid of all incentives. I would love to do that, by the way. If every state got rid of all incentives, Utah would win every time. But we know that that's not going to happen. So we have to be able to check that box and we have to be able to compete. But we can be much more focused on the industries that we are incentivizing to come here and make sure that they are industries that, again, are high-paying jobs that are going to benefit not just the company that's coming here and a few workers, but that will benefit a much larger portion of the state, focusing on rural Utah and their economic development, as well as making sure that these are industries that are sticky, that are going to stay here and bring others with them.
We have the enviable problem, I guess you could say, that there are many more jobs than there are qualified people in some capacities to take those jobs. How do we address that problem and realign the skills that workers have in Utah for the jobs that are needed?
Yeah, well, first of all, we have to recognize that this really is a problem. As a country, we've made a mistake over the past 40 years, to be perfectly blunt. We have separated work from education for far too long. We focused on education being the thing you do for the first 20-ish years of your life and then work being what you do after. That's a mistake. The other mistake that we've made is this idea that every kid needs a bachelor's degree. It's bad for our kids and it's bad for our economy. We have young people with incredible aptitudes, and we should be bringing work and education together in powerful ways. Earlier on in life, middle school and high school, giving kids real-world opportunities to figure out what they're good at, what they're passionate about, and then extending that later into life so that we become a people who believe that that we are constantly learning, that every few years we're getting retrained and retooled. The new economy is so different than the old economy. A friend of mine who retired recently said that, you know, he had all the knowledge he needed in the coming out of college for the first 30 years of his career. Now he just retired. I laughed at him and I said, that will never happen again. The changing nature of work requires us to constantly be learning and changing. And so we have to invest in big ways in our skills programs, again, both in high school and in our UTech institutions. They haven't gotten the love that they needed for too long, but we have incredible certificates. In a matter of 6 months, kids can be making $70,000, and there are young people who would love that, and they shouldn't feel guilty like they have to go to college, and then what happens is they drop out after a couple years, and they don't have a degree, and they have a lot of debt, and that's a terrible situation for everyone.
Finally, for the first time since Utah Foundation started prioritizing surveys and asking people, public health emerged as one of the top five issues. I know you've been working a lot in this area, particularly with the pandemic, and that's likely why it's been so important on this list for the first time. As governor, what would the picture of our health look like 6 months after you took office, and how would we get there?
Well, 6 months after I take office, it better look a lot better than it does today. And the hope is, again, we're working nationally and internationally on therapeutics. Of course, we're working on a vaccine, and we know that will be coming next year. So that's a big piece of it. But look, I was I served as a county commissioner in Sanpete County, and I was the chair of the 6-county public health entity. And we this was during the H1N1 outbreak, and we were terribly underfunded at that point. The thing about public health is it's not something that we ever think about, and it's not a priority, and you don't need it until you do, and that's when it becomes very problematic. By the way, this is not a Utah thing. This is a national thing. So much of the funding comes from the federal level, and that funding has been drying up over the years. So they get left behind, they get forgotten about, and then we hit a pandemic, and suddenly everybody's, you know, hair on fire. County public health, what are you going to do? How are you going to fix this? We need to make sure that we take care of them in the good times, not just the bad times, and refocusing on what we're asking them to do and their funding streams. And again, we're seeing that pivot at the national level, which will help tremendously. But we can't lose focus at the state and at the local level.
Okay, just for time's sake, if you had a minute to summarize your thoughts and to tell our audience why you would be the best candidate to lead our state.
Well, let me just end by saying this. First of all, thank you so much for what you were doing. The work of the foundation is critically important to what we do as a state. We live in incredibly divisive times. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. You will see something different during this gubernatorial race. I actually like this guy. His running mate sent flowers to my running mate when she was diagnosed with COVID-19. This is the way politics should work. This is, Utah should expect more of their politicians. We should be able to have civil discourse. We can disagree, and we will, but this is really important that we are able to have these conversations. That is not happening at the national level. You know that. You're seeing it every day. But Utah has an opportunity to truly be an example to the rest of the nation in politics and in the way we do policy. I am a true believer. Partisanship is ruining our country. George Washington warned us. Turns out he was right. But evidence-based policymaking gives us an opportunity to cut through the clutter, to make the right decisions, to actually benefit the citizens of the state of Utah, and to do the right things for the right reasons. We can't just do evidence-based policymaking on our own at the state level. We need your help. And so everything you do impacts us in big ways. Keep doing that good work, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Cox. Now we would like to welcome Professor Chris Peterson, a professor of business law at the University of Utah. Chris has worked as a special advisor in the U.S. Department of Defense, where he has led the Pentagon's efforts to protect military service members from predatory lending. The Secretary of Defense awarded Peterson the Office of the Secretary of Defense Award for Excellence for his efforts on behalf of military families. Chris served in the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, where Peterson's team stopped deceptive and abusive practices by banks, payday lenders, and debt collection agencies. At the University of Utah, he's worked as an associate dean for the academic affairs with managerial responsibility for the education mission of the University of Utah's College of Law. Peterson is a national leader and authority on consumer protection. He has published several books, including a university textbook on consumer law and an award-winning book on predatory lending. The National Association of Consumer Agency Administrators, and it's an association of state and local consumer law enforcement agencies, gave Peterson its National Consumer Advocate Award of the Year for his public service. Chris is a fifth-generation Utah with deep pioneer roots in this state. He was born and raised in West Valley City and attended Utah's public schools. He's a father of three and married to Tara Peterson, who is also a practicing attorney. Again, as we look, I want to review the top five issues that all relate to impact, to how the COVID impact has been. Once again, that list is healthcare costs, taxation and spending, education, jobs in the economy, and public health. What of those areas is your top concern? And as governor, what would be your first priority?
I agree with Spencer. Look, we got to get this virus under control. It's destroying our economy. It's destroying small jobs. It's one of the leading causes of death in our state right now. Across the country, we're just up to about 200,000 Americans have perished. That's more people, more Americans than died in the First World War. It's more Americans than died in every combat operation, including the Korean War, the Vietnamese War, and all the Middle Eastern wars combined. And it doesn't look like it's slowing down. We're having a serious spike in the infection rate, and I'm very concerned about the long-term health effects of it, both economically and in terms of our families, our grandparents, people who are struggling with immune compromise. We've got to get this virus under control. We need to, it's the top priority, no question about it.
As we move to healthcare costs, what's the state's role in lowering costs for pharmaceuticals, for healthcare services, things like that?
Yeah. I think that, you know, there are some things that we're doing right in this state, and I don't know what folks are expecting me to come up and say, but I'm a moderate, and I think that we're doing some good things in the state, but we do have some real challenges. We're about halfway in the middle or the lower third in terms of the number of people who have health insurance in a ranking nationwide in comparison to other states. And our country, of course, is far behind other countries around the world. We pay more in expenditures and we get less quality care than most industrialized civilizations around the world. And Utah has a part to play to try to increase access and decrease costs. First off, I think we need to make sure that we protect the public's vote in favor of, shall we call it Romney care in this room instead of Obamacare? Because I think that Obamacare was Romney care before it was Obamacare. I'm really proud that my Lieutenant Governor running mate, Karina Brown, who's with me here today, was one of the sponsors of the ballot measure to expand Medicaid. And I, if I'm elected, will protect that vote. We need to make sure, you know, there's no guarantee that that doesn't get undone this January or the January after that. The public has voted for it. We need to make sure that that goes into place. Second, I think that we've got to emphasize mental health more. We need to make sure that mental health care is treated on parity with normal or physiological health care. We have one of the highest suicide rates in the country. It's because too many of our citizens are falling into despair and don't get the access they need. Third, I think that I'm very disappointed. It's a smaller issue, but it's an important one. Because of a relatively small budget shortfall, about $2.5 million, we're shutting down three public health care clinics in the middle of a pandemic. That's exactly the wrong direction. There are clinics in Ogden, Salt Lake, and Provo that are, I understand, slated to be shut down now, even though they're serving some of the most at-risk populations. That's Pennywise and Pound Foolish. There's a role for public clinics to play. I also think that we should be doing more to create prescription drug affordability. I am particularly interested in the Northwest Consortium. Oregon and Washington are pooling their purchasing capabilities in both private and public plans to get the lowest costs for their prescription drugs. And they're also publishing those prices on a publicly available database to make sure that consumers can audit whether or not they're, you know, maybe getting ripped off when they go to their pharmacy or at a hospital or other medical provider. And I also would like to add that I think that there's some real opportunities we've seen with improving our access to, cutting out red tape, and facilitating telehealth care. We've seen some real positive developments on that across the state during the coronavirus pandemic. It's cheaper, it's more efficient, it also doesn't spread disease in quite the same way. So there's some real opportunities for improvement here. Those are some of the things that I think I'd like to focus on. Thank you.
Okay, so you listed some specific ideas there on increasing accessibility. I'd like to just move on to the tax and government spending. What's your philosophy on taxation?
Well, first off, I echo the Lieutenant Governor's emphasis on efficiency and fiscal responsibility. In my life, I've spent a lot of time talking about personal financial responsibility, but I also think that that goes for businesses and it also goes for government. And so I think that it's smart for us to generally keep a low tax base. I also think that our transparency or truth in taxation law for local governments, it's tough medicine, but it's probably overall positive for the state. That being said, I don't believe our tax code at the state level always reflects our best values. We have a lot of tax incentives, tax credits, and tax loopholes that don't get the same level of scrutiny that our expenditures do. The state government's done a good job at, you know, making sure they look at every dollar that they're spending. By and large, I think there have been some mistakes in recent years, but we do a pretty good job at that. The thing that we don't don't look at carefully is whether or not the value that we as a state are getting from the foregone revenue that we could have collected, whether or not that really reflects our best value. Is that tax incentive that we gave to that particular business or individual worth not providing that compensation to the teachers or the kids that are struggling to learn how to read? So we need to do better scrutiny there. Second, I believe that to whom more is given, a little bit more needs to be expected. We have a flat income tax, but if you look across all the different sources of revenue for our state government, whether that's property taxes, use fees, et cetera, we have a regressive tax system where low and moderate income people pay a disproportionate share of their income and overall wealth. That's immoral. It's not because I'm a wild-eyed liberal. It's because Isaiah told me that, you know, it's in the Bible, to whom more is given, a little bit more needs to be expected. We've lost track of that in this state because so much of our government is focused on lobbyists and special exceptions for this person or that person that we've allowed the people, the ordinary working people of this state, to take on a disproportionate share of funding the government. It's unacceptable, it's immoral, and I'll do a better job of trying to prevent that from happening. And then last, I think I'd like to mention in particular how disappointed I was when recently the state government moved to try to stabilize our income, our tax revenue base by nearly tripling food taxes in this state. So a kid like me who grew up in West Valley City with very limited income and a disabled mom, that has a direct impact on whether or not some children in our state will go hungry and some seniors who are on a fixed budget. It was the wrong decision. The public overwhelmingly rejected it, but there's nothing to guarantee that next January or the January after that, we won't see another run at trying to increase those food taxes. I will not let that go, I'll veto that. So for those of you that care about not taxing food, I think I'm a safe bet.
Maybe this alludes to the next question, but what areas are we spending too little on and too much on?
Well, I think we're spending far too little on public education, given the number of children and the youth of our population. Sometimes I wonder whether or not we're spending a little too much on roads. We got to have roads. We have a very growing population. That infrastructure is important. But if I had my druthers, I think we'd probably dial that more towards some other forms of infrastructure development, including rural broadband. Hopefully, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And also, especially along the crowded Wasatch Front, public transportation. Don't get me wrong, though. We're going to have to continue to have roads. It's important for our society. It's not realistic to avoid them. I'd say those are the two areas where maybe we need to do a little bit of adjusting.
Okay. In education, K through 12, in that arena, what is something specific that we are getting right? And what is the one area that you think we need to improve on?
Well, I think one area that we're doing right is that, you know, we have a lot of family involvement in raising our kids. It's part of our culture. It's one of the reasons that I think that we're doing as well, you know, doing better than maybe we have any right to expect given the level of funding in the state. And so our strong family values in this state are something we should be proud of and that I'm proud of. You know, I'm a husband and a father of three kids, and I'm proud to see my kids thriving, and I'm hoping for that for others. But the real challenge that I see, as I've said, I'm a fiscal conservative. I don't want taxes to get out of control as much as the next person. But we have cut to the bone in our public education. We have the lowest per pupil funding in America and have for decades. Now, we've done, you know, not that well. Honestly, our scores overall are about, you know, the bottom third, halfway. Utah was supposed to be life elevated, not life kind of mediocre. We should be expecting more of our kids and ourselves. We should be leading the country. Let's go fight those folks in Connecticut, in Massachusetts, in California, some of the best off places in California. Let's have the best educated kids in America. And to do that, we're going to have to invest some more money. We're going to have to come up with the revenue to do it. So I think we need to focus on retaining and recruiting top quality teachers. Did you know that right now, 1 in 4 fourth graders in our state does not know how to read? And now those kids, junior high years are coming up soon. They're going to drift off. The high school years shortly after that, one in eight kids aren't graduating from high school on time. That's unacceptable for a state like ours that has a long pioneer heritage of supporting public education. So I think that we need to nurture our public neighborhood schools. There's a place for charter schools. Some of them are doing a good job, some maybe less so. But we need to focus on those neighborhood schools that build strong community bonds and make sure they have the programs, the resources they need. One last thing I'll mention about public education that we're not doing a good enough job on. You know, we have one of the very highest teen suicide rates in America. Part of the, one of the side effects of our culture, our unified sort of happy culture, is that sometimes people get pushed to the periphery of that and they struggle. And we need the resources in our public school to take care of those little kids. We need to be making sure that there are the counselors and the mentors in place to try and identify them and get them the help they need. We owe that to all those children to not let them left behind and not let them be bullied into taking their own lives.
Jobs in the economy has been one of the top five issues. And how do you feel our state is doing in terms of job creation? Where could we be doing a better job?
Well, we're doing some things well and doing some things less well, it seems to me. I mean, first off, I've already mentioned the coronavirus crisis. I don't want to, maybe we'll talk about that again in a minute, but that's got to be the top priority. It's suppressing our economy. We can't have a healthy economy until we have healthy people. But some of the things we're doing right, you know, we've done a pretty good job of clearing out regulations that aren't productive. I believe in rules. I just want good rules, rules that are actually get good bang for the buck and don't create a lot of compliance costs, but really facilitate efficient commerce, rules like don't lie in business, don't cheat. Those are good rules. There's, you know, a lot of technical, complicated rules. We've done a pretty good job of clearing them out. I'd want to continue that. I also think that we've done a pretty good job at keeping our unemployment rates low. The problem that I see is that too many of these jobs, they're $9, they're $10 an hour jobs, not careers. It's part of why we have a relatively high number of people in our state that don't have health insurance. We need to make sure that we're not just getting jobs out there, but investing in careers and getting people the jobs that they can build a family around and invest back in their communities long term. So how can we do a better job at that? Well, short term, I think that we should be taking advantage of the rock bottom interest rates that we see right now to invest in shovel ready infrastructure development projects. The money's almost free right now with the rock bottom interest rates, and we need stimulus of our economy. So some of the things we should be working on are, I think, our rural economic broadband to try to support a growing job base for our Silicon Slopes industry. Will also facilitate decreasing healthcare costs by facilitating telehealth in rural Utah. And I also think that we should be investing in green energy. I know there's a lot of talk about it, but look, we have the third best geothermal energy untapped resources in America in our state. It provides steady power, whether the wind is blowing or the sun is shining. I also think we need to be investing in more rooftop solar in our residences, businesses, and governments, and commercial solar plants in rural Utah to try to increase some rural jobs out there. Last thing I'll mention, you know, the minimum wage in our state is still at $7.25 an hour, and there are people out there, where I grew up, people in Price, Utah, people in some of the other communities that are struggling, that are still making that $7.25 an hour. And we've seen that in cities and states that raise that minimum wage, the economy does just fine. Why? Because you're putting a little more money back in the pockets of those people and they become better customers. They're more likely to go out and spend some money at a local business, a retailer, go to the theater. And we will do better if we increase that minimum wage. It's time. $7.25 an hour is just completely unacceptable.
One of the ways that we could get more people with those higher paying jobs or careers, as you mentioned, is to better align what skills they have with the jobs that are needed in the state. What do we need to do
I'm so glad you asked that. That's such a great question. You know, one of the things that I would love to do, I don't know if there are any Silicon Slopes people in the room. They're not interested in talking to me. I guess they don't think I'm going to win. But here's what I think. If I got to be the governor, I would want to try to find, work with, leverage our research universities and our technical colleges and community colleges to first keep inventing great new technology and tech transfer right here in our Silicon Slopes and throughout the state. But second, I would want to try to get a menu of the jobs that they need, not just here in Utah, but across their corporate footprint. The data scientists, the biologists, the coders, what are they going to need, not just now, but in the next 10 years, and ramp up the production of people with those degrees in our public research universities and colleges and technical colleges to make sure when they're ready to invest, they come here and have shovel ready, and maybe we should say computer ready workforce, ready to suck up those jobs and give back to our communities.
Okay. Once again, public health, first time on the list of issues. You've made it clear that getting the pandemic under control is would be your top priority. So 6 months after you were to take office as governor, what would the picture of our health, public health, look like, and how would we get there?
Well, first off, it depends on what happens with the science. So let me talk about my overall strategic approach. First off, two things. One, science. The thing that separates us in this day and age from where we were, back when they were sticking leeches on people and, doing all sorts of, quack medicine, is the scientific method. And I think that as I've gone around the state, I'm starting to realize that our appreciation of the significance of that is fraying. We need to focus on following scientific evidence and crafting our response to this disease. Second overall strategic point is we need to engage in teamwork, and we need to make sure that we're treating each other with respect and love, and treating each other like neighbors. We can't defeat a natural disaster. That's what this is. It's like a flood or a fire. It's a plague. This natural disaster is going to require those two things for us to get past them. So tactically, what should we be doing? First off, I'm hoping for the vaccine too. Believe me, I'm hoping for that. But there are no guarantees about that vaccine. And the last thing we should be doing is sticking a bunch of an untested vaccine into a bunch of healthy people. So hopefully that's going to be there. And if it is in 6 months after I'm elected, if I am, that'll obviously make a big difference. But in the short term, one of the biggest differences between the lieutenant governor and I is I have called for a statewide mask mandate. And I'm fully aware of how that's going to get received in some corners of the state. The reason that I did that is because all of the scientific advisors that I talked to recommended it, because I believe in science. The comparison for me is, you remember, some of you remember in the early 1980s when we had a big flood, snow filled up the mountains, and it was going to come and flood Temple Square in the downtown business district. It was going to be a catastrophe. But Governor Matheson, the last Democratic governor of this state, and a bunch of volunteers, the Salt Lake City mayor, got together and they built a river right down Main Street. And what did they do to try to do that? They got a bunch of sandbags. It saved it downtown. They responded to that natural disaster with this time-tested technology, sandbags, and teamwork, and actually saved the day. We need to do the same thing. The problem is that you can't see the virus, because unlike water. Masks are like sandbags. They actually slow the spread of the disease. They're the best available technology we have. And you can go take a look at the data. The counties that have imposed mandatory mask mandates, Salt Lake, Grand, and Summit County, have seen their infection rates steadily declining. And the increase, the spike that we're seeing, are the counties that have not done so and are engaged in, I think, some unclear thinking about what the risks are to their communities and the way that we prevent those risks. So that's one significant difference. I also think we need to radically decrease testing processing times so we can not have this tail of uncertainty. People need to know whether or not they can go back to work right away. Second, I think we need to, I would probably triple to quadruple the number of in-person contact tracers. I'm really disappointed that cell phone app that they were looking at didn't work out. I think it's a good idea, but we just wasted the money. That, by the way, would have more than paid for keeping open those three healthcare clinics I mentioned. And then radically increasing contact tracing. I'll stop there. You're giving me a look that says I'm going on too long.
I just want to give you time, a minute or so, to wrap up your thoughts.
Sorry about that.
And to let our audience know, why would you be the best candidate to lead our state?
Well, look, I think that it's probably time for a little bit of balance in our government. It's not such a crazy thing to have a Matheson, Cal Rampton-style Democrat trying to make things a little bit more balanced. You know, in the last election, the state of Utah passed three ballot measures, medical marijuana under the supervision of a physician, the Medicaid expansion we talked about, and good for the good Republicans of Utah that passed an anti-gerrymandering ballot measure to try and create an independent redistricting commission and a partisan symmetry test to try to make sure that, you know, our districts are fair. And what happens? Well, if, you know, folks at the state legislature went and watered down all three of those ballot measures. And the Herbert administration assigned each of those bills into law without forcing a veto. That's not good for the Republican Party. It's not good for the Democratic Party. It's not good for the people of Utah. We need a little more listening to the public and a little bit of healthy balance in this state to try to make sure that, you know, we're not careening off into special interests or privileged insiders and party elites. I'm going to be, if I'm elected, a moderate, reasonable governor that's going to work across party lines. I'm not Nancy Pelosi. I'm just a normal Utah kid that's trying to make a difference in this world. So why should you vote for me? Because I'm going to be a reasonable moderate and will do a better job of balancing us back toward the middle.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.